From Texas Public Radio, this is Texas Matters, a weekly radio news magazine that looks at the issues, events, and people in the Lone Star State. Today on Texas Matters, with primary votes being cast, does Ted Nugent cast a pall on the Greg Abbott campaign for governor? And fracking Texas, is it causing earthquakes, and what's it doing to our air? This is Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Texans are going to the polls in early voting for the March 4th primaries, but thoughts about the general election are never far away for those in the governor's race. Democrat Wendy Davis and Republican Greg Abbott continue to trade jabs through the media, and this week the addition of former rocker and current gun advocate Ted Nugent gave the campaign something new to talk about. KERA's Shelley Koffler reports.
If you know rock and roll, you know Ted Nugent.
Ted Nugent has campaigned with Governor Rick Perry for years, promoting gun rights and limited government. But when Democrats learned he'd be appearing with Greg Abbott on the first day of early voting, they called it an outrage. They highlighted some of the Motor City Madman's derogatory name-calling, his referring to feminists as fat pigs and dirty whores, and to President Obama as a communist-nurtured subhuman mongrel. They identified a documentary in which Nugent reportedly said he had affairs with underage girls several decades ago.
I think the fact that Greg Abbott is embracing those values is repulsive.
Wendy Davis, Abbott's Democratic opponent, started her morning at a Fort Worth polling location. She said Abbott's campaigning with Nugent is an insult to Texans, especially women.
And I think for Greg Abbott to embrace him, to stand with him on this important day of early voting, demonstrates what his values are.
40 miles to the north in Denton, at his Get Out the Vote rally, Abbott defended his choice of campaign headliners.
I don't know what he may have said or done in his background. What I do know is Ted Nugent stands for the Constitution. He stands against the federal government overreaching.
Abbott tried to turn the tables on Davis.
Ted Nugent bothers Wendy Davis because he highlights the way that Wendy Davis has flip-flopped and flipped again on Second Amendment rights.
Last week, Davis said she supports allowing Texans to openly carry guns as long as they go through proper training and background checks. Abbott says the flip-flop came when she said she'd allow individual businesses and property owners to opt out.
Every municipality, every school district, every hospital, every private business owner have the opportunity to say whether this is something that's appropriate on their property.
At the rally, Nugent edged away from reporters, but briefly fired back when pressed.
Wendy Davis made you a campaign issue today. And
she ought to, because she hasn't got anything meaningful to campaign on, so she's got to beat a Pelosi attack dog.
He said House Minority Leader Nancy Pelosi and Davis are two of a kind.
Because they're dishonest, anti-American people.
Well, what about all of
Nugent continued on with Abbott to another rally in Wichita Falls. While the candidate called Nugent a defender of the Constitution, Democrats are calling him a predator. Shelley Koffler, KERA News.
Illegal immigration has been a big issue in the race for the GOP nomination for lieutenant governor, and State Senator Dan Patrick has been the most in-your-face on the issue. But this week, a story broke accusing him of employing illegal immigrants himself in the 1980s. The Dallas Morning News and KTRK-TV broke that story, but they were given the tip by another lieutenant governor candidate, Jerry Patterson. Some call that dirty politics, but as KUT's Ben Philpott reports, it's a common practice called opposition research.
His mother may not like to hear this, but Jason Stanford is an opposition researcher.
Oh, God, yes. My mom tells people I'm a used car dealer.
Stanford heads up his own political consulting firm that specializes in researching the public records of political candidates. And he knows what people outside of politics think of what he does.
When people think about opposition research, they think about going on bimbo patrol. What opposition research really is looking for relevant public records that help voters make choices. And most often, all voters really care about is, what did you say, who'd you take money from, and where'd you vote for?
But when someone hires Stanford, job one isn't figuring out how to take an opponent down. It's about what's in his client's past that could hurt the campaign.
A lot of times we'll find that someone lived in an area that was zoned whites only, or they had an old tax lien they forgot about in the 80s, or they kind of forgot to vote a whole bunch.
Once the defensive research is out of the way, it's time to go on the offense. Stanford admits there's nothing very high-minded about it. A candidate wants to know the dirt on their opponent. Something, anything, that could help defeat them in the election. The first step, a run-of-the-mill Google search to see what quotes or stories come up on the candidate. Then it's on to public record databases, where you can find everything from traffic tickets to bankruptcies. It all sounds a lot more mundane than you'd expect, but that's not to say Stanford doesn't get more ambitious research requests from clients who have heard rumors about their opponents and want to find documentation of the despicable act.
I know that he killed someone and he had to go live in Florida for 2 years. That's a true story. I wish I was making this up. We literally kept that fax because it was so ridiculous. It's taped up to a wall over here somewhere.
Whatever the research is, it usually ends up one of two places, either in paid political ads, mailers, TV, or web videos, or at a local news outlet.
You know, I call this the season of the brown envelope.
That's Ross Ramsey. He's executive editor of the Texas Tribune, KUT's political reporting partner, and he's often a depository for opposition research handed out by political campaigns in an effort to discredit opponents. Some of the envelopes he receives are clearly marked, addressed from a campaign or consultant, but not always.
My favorite one this year was someone sent me an envelope full of information about a candidate in the lieutenant governor's race that was from Ross Ramsey to Ross Ramsey. So I think future Ross Ramsey might have sent me some information.
So what does a news organization do with these tips, especially when you consider the goal behind each brown envelope? Ramsey says it's like any other tip that comes into a newsroom.
People say, you ought to look at this, you ought to look at that. And you look at some of them and you say, oh, that's a story. And you investigate it and run it down and it is a story. And some of the things that come in as tips, you look at them and you say, for one reason or another, that's not a story. Just because something is damaging to a candidate and came from their opponent doesn't mean it's not a story. It just means you've really got to check it out.
But Ramsey says there are some brown envelopes that don't get follow-ups. That includes claims of youthful indiscretion that are used as reasons someone shouldn't be elected.
So-and-so did this when they were 17, so now that they're 53, they're unqualified to... And sometimes you look at those and you go, that may actually be right. And more often you look at them and you say, this is old information. What else you got?
And with less than 2 weeks before the March primaries, opposition researchers probably have plenty more to share. Ben Philpott.
The GOP race for the Railroad Commission nomination, not normally a headline grabber, but things are shaking up because the ground is shaking up in Texas. There has been a recent surge of earthquakes in the state, and it's connected to the oil and gas activity. The Railroad Commission oversees the petroleum industry in Texas, and it's been reluctant to address the problem. But as State Impact Texas, KUT's Mose Bouchel reports, those Railroad Commission candidates are collecting large campaign contributions from the oil and gas industry.
During a public meeting in the North Texas town of Azle last month, officials from the Railroad Commission got an earful from locals sick of all the earthquakes.
Who's going to cover all of the damages that may occur in the future if we fail to act right now?
Since the drilling boom hit Texas, many places have felt quakes that never felt them before. But regulators at the commission say the connection between that shaking and disposal wells requires more study. That has people like David Johnson pretty upset.
Now, it may not be taken care of after this meeting, but maybe if the earth shakes down in Austin, we'll get some results.
Johnson could have been talking about a literal earthquake, or he could have meant a political one. And at least some are now betting on political.
My name is Steve Brown, and I'm running for the position of Texas Railroad Commissioner.
Brown is a Democrat. Like all statewide offices in Texas, the three seats on the Railroad Commission are currently held by Republicans. But Brown thinks this year he has a chance. His strategy? He's agreeing with decades of scientific research and saying out loud that injection wells, like those used to dispose of wastewater from drilling, can cause earthquakes.
The commission needs to find a way to suspend operations for those clusters of injection wells in that area until we found some type of conclusive evidence that everyone feels comfortable with of what's causing these quakes.
That distinguishes him from the other Democrat running, as well as Republicans. Becky Berger is a Republican primary candidate.
One of the things that people in Azell didn't realize was that their developer had them build that subdivision on top of a fault zone. And there's nothing the Railroad Commission can do about that.
Berger was the only Republican in the race who responded to requests for comment on this issue. But as a recent report in the Dallas Morning News detailed, all the other major party candidates reject the science linking injection wells to earthquakes.
Are they blind? I mean, except maybe one or two. Every study says that they are linked. How can they say there is no correlation?
Linda Stokes is the mayor of the North Texas town of Reno, the epicenter of the most recent swarm of quakes.
How can they say that they don't know of anything? If they are, they're choosing to just turn their face and look the other way while the very people they're supposed to be representing and protecting are suffering the consequences.
Stokes calls herself an independent. She blames political contributions from the industry for politicians' unwillingness to acknowledge the link between disposal wells and quakes. She says those politicians will pay a price at the ballot box.
Because I'll tell you what, we have a lot of very intelligent people in our area. We have a lot of people who get on the internet and read the studies that are available. And everybody knows that these wells are linked to this.
But for a Democrat, turning earthquake anger into votes will be tricky. For example, Reno is located in Parker County. Voters there supported Mitt Romney by 82% in the 2012 election. Still, Steve Brown says he thinks he can reach those voters.
Sitting down with them and talking to them, it became quite clear that this becomes more about their interest than about their partisan, you know, alignment. And so, you know, I think there are Parker counties throughout the state.
Zan Prince is not too concerned. She's head of the Parker County GOP.
I think when it comes to general election that the GOP voters will show up regardless of whether or not this issue is resolved concerning the earthquake connection to drilling.
No matter the outcome, the issue already seems to have more people focused on the race for the Railroad Commission, one that's usually treated as a down-ballot afterthought by many Texas voters. Reporting on energy and the environment for State Impact Texas, I'm Mose Bouchel.
Up in Pennsylvania, Houston-based Halliburton this week was handed a big fine by state environmental officials. The penalty had to do with how Halliburton transported and disposed of waste acid from gas well sites. State Impact Texas KUHF's Dave Failing has been looking into how acid is used to drill for oil and gas, and he shows us how there are concerns over the dangers to the environment and to workers.
If you're not in the business of oil, getting it out of the ground might seem pretty straightforward. Just drill down to where the oil is and let it shoot to the surface, then sit back and start collecting millions of dollars for it. The reality is far different. You can see it in places like Bryan College Station. Just north of the Texas A&M campus are oil and gas fields. Drilling is picking up here. You see lots of newly completed oil wells with their pump jacks bobbing up and down. At a truck stop, Tony Tyrone was gassing up his tanker rig after a day out in the fields.
We haul mud, oil-based mud.
Is that what comes up out of the...
Goes into the ground.
He's explaining the drilling process. Tanker trucks full of chemical solutions, some of it called mud because it's mixed with clay, is circulated down and back out of the well as the hole is drilled. Sometimes acids are injected to help eat away rock to make it easier for the oil or natural gas to escape. The quantities of chemical solutions used are enormous. It's almost like a chemical plant, but where much of the activity is happening over a mile underground. We asked Tad Patzik to help explain it.
It requires trainloads of sand, trainloads of water, hundreds of truck trips.
He's head of petroleum engineering at the University of Texas. We wanted to know more about all those chemicals, including the widely used hydrochloric acid.
Human injuries, that would be the main danger of such a job.
Like rig workers or truck drivers handling the acid above ground. Because Patzik, as well as spokespeople for the industry, all told us there is little danger to people or the environment once the acid is injected because it reacts with rocks and becomes neutralized.
You know, there's little danger of acid spilling anywhere underground and doing some permanent damage to an aquifer.
Nonetheless, the drilling industry has had its concerns. In articles we reviewed that were written by industry researchers over the last 7 years, there was a push to find alternatives to chemicals like hydrochloric acid. One paper called the acid, quote, difficult to handle safely. Another paper said alternatives were needed that would be less toxic to mammals and aquatic organisms. Alternative chemicals do exist. There's specialized acids that are reportedly safer and far less toxic, but they are far more expensive, from 3 to 10 times more expensive, according to the industry. So their actual use appears limited. And in some places, the commonly used hydrochloric acid has recently been a target of state regulators. In Pennsylvania, where there's been a dramatic surge in drilling for natural gas, the state's Department of Environmental Protection investigated Halliburton Energy Services, based in Houston. The department said it found that Halliburton had been transporting waste hydrochloric acid from well sites without using licensed hazardous waste transporters or disposal sites. While it said neither people nor the environment got hurt, Pennsylvania announced earlier this week it reached an agreement with Halliburton in which the company will pay a fine of $1.8 million. Halliburton told State Impact is working with Pennsylvania regulators to ensure that the company's work there is environmentally friendly. In Texas, where the number of wells being drilled dwarfs Pennsylvania and every other state, data on how much acid is being used and where is not tracked by the state. Likewise, the agency that enforces rules for transporting and disposing acid from drilling, the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, said it doesn't categorize data by the kind of waste disposed, so it couldn't say whether it's taken any enforcement action, like what happened in Pennsylvania. For State Impact Texas, I'm Dave Failing.
There's growing concern about what all that oil activity in the Eagle Ford Shale play and down in South Texas is doing to air quality. Inside Climate News, the Center for Public Integrity, and the Weather Channel have produced a documentary looking into the toxic chemicals being released into the air and how the Texas environmental regulators are not keeping up. The report is called Fracking the Eagle Ford Shale, Big Oil and Bad Air on the Texas Prairie. Lisa Song is a reporter for Inside Climate News.
Well, the Eagle Ford Shale is a large region in South Texas. It's about 400 miles by 50 miles, and it's in the southern part of Texas. It doesn't go through any of the large cities, and it really is one of the most active oil and gas shale plays in the country.
And this was an area that for a long time was very economically depressed, but then people figured out a way to extract the oil from this Eagle Ford Shale area.
Yes, it has definitely brought a boom to the region. We interviewed people from, I would say many of our interviews took place in Karnes County, which is sort of at the heart of the Eagle Ford boom. And, you know, talking to some of the local officials, say the local judge, they are they are very happy at the economic boom. On the other hand, they also do see the disadvantages that come with it. They talked about traffic accidents and the poor state of the roads and that kind of thing.
Sure, concerns about water and about waste disposal. But y'all are focusing on the air quality. So apparently when you do this oil and gas extraction, there's a lot of gas that gets emitted. Talk about that.
Sure. We decided to focus on air quality because when most people write about or report on hydraulic fracturing, they're writing about water, and we wanted to see, you know, what's happening with the air. So I went into it just starting with the idea, okay, if you're looking at air, you have to look at more than just the fracking part. The fracking process takes place over a few days or perhaps a week or two. But when you're talking about the life of an oil or gas well, that can last for months or many years. So when you're talking about air, you have to start from the moment the well is drilled through the fracking, through the production and processing. And through all of that time, you have various machines and generators that are run on diesel or natural gas. They emit many different types of air pollutants. And also the oil and gas that you are taking out of the earth, they will naturally off-gas certain pollutants. And we're talking about things like hydrogen sulfide, which is very dangerous for workers. We're also talking about volatile organic compounds or VOCs. The most commonly known one is probably benzene and toluene and some of those compounds, but there are also more obscure VOCs that are coming out of the process the entire time.
For people who live in South Texas who have seen this incredible boon with the Eagle Ford Shale, we've seen towns just grow up that had been like dying for generations. Suddenly, a lot of business, a lot of activity. But when you look out into the distance at night, you see all the flaring. You see all the fire that is going off at these oil pads. What is happening with that flaring? What is that?
There are actually different types of flaring, but a lot of the flaring that you see is the operators burning off the excess gas. Right now, most of the wells that are drilled in the Eagle Ford are called oil wells, but what comes out of them is not just oil. It's a combination of oil and natural gas and all of the hydrocarbons in between, which are called natural gas liquids. And because the natural gas is often the least valuable part of the product. The price of natural gas is so low right now compared to oil and the condensates. They often, instead of capturing the natural gas and selling it, they will just burn it off in these flares. And that's why you can see, you know, these orange flame flares that go on for weeks or even months at a time. That they're just doing that to get rid of the natural gas while they're extracting the oil.
You're talking about the dangerous toxins, the pollution, air pollution that's coming out of as a result of the drilling and the extraction of the oil. How is this impacting people? I mean, there are people that live right adjacent to many of these drilling pads.
Yeah, that was something we discovered was we looked through the state regulatory agency, the TCEQ. They have a database of citizen complaints. And over the past 4 years or so, there have been almost 300 citizen complaints filed by residents of the Eagle Ford about various complaints related to natural gas and oil drilling. And most of those were related to air. And these residents were all reporting things like, oh, you know, I could smell rotten egg odor, which is characteristic of hydrogen sulfide. They complained of headaches and nausea and nosebleeds, badly aggravated asthma. And these symptoms, we know, are the types of symptoms you would expect when people are exposed to the types of chemicals that come out of oil and gas drilling. Now, if you want to make the absolute scientific proof, the link between, you know, it's the actual oil and gas causing these symptoms, then you need scientific studies to come in. But we're not seeing any studies in the Eagle Ford. So there doesn't seem to be much interest or funding available to actually do the kind of public health studies we need to understand what is going on.
So the Texas Commission on Environmental Quality, the TCEQ, it's like the state EPA, they do air monitoring. That's part of their job.
Part of their job. Well, what we discovered was they are doing air monitoring, but not nearly enough to really understand what's happening. The TCEQ, most of the air monitoring that they do in the Eagle Ford region is what's called spot monitoring. You know, they might drive out there for a random inspection or during an investigation to respond to a complaint. And during the course of that, they will take some grab samples of air quality. They will take some air samples that tell you, you know, at this moment in time, at this particular location, the air quality is like this. But what you really need to do is to combine that spot monitoring with continuous permanent air monitors. And right now, the TCEQ only has 5 permanent air monitors in the entire Eagle Ford region. And we're talking about 5 air monitors for an area that's nearly twice the size of Massachusetts. And those monitors are at the very edges of the drilling. They're nowhere near the places where most of the drilling is occurring, which means if you want to see what air quality is like in the places where it's likely to be the worst, we have no idea because we don't have permanent air monitors there.
Lisa Song is a reporter for Inside Climate News. She contributed to the production of a documentary on toxic air pollution in the Eagle Ford Shale Play, along with the Center for Public Integrity and the Weather Channel. There is a link to the documentary on our website, tpr.org. The Cline Shale that surrounds Snyder, Texas, northwest of Abilene, is expected to be the next big oil play in Texas. The economic forecast for the region predicts a boom for landowners and a need for qualified oil field workers. However, getting the oil out of the ground has become increasingly expensive and complicated. The hydraulic fracturing and horizontal drilling methods of oil extraction requires workers who are willing to work hard, fast, and smart. Thus, willing students and eager oil companies are coming to the Western Texas College to prepare for the anticipated demands of the energy industry. We get a report from WTC student reporter Regan Stout that gives us insight into the next generation of Texas oil field workers.
On February 12, 2014, the Western Texas College Petroleum Department hosted an Oxy Wellkill demo and info session. The Occidental Petroleum Corporation was able to provide students an information session to learn more about their company, to network with representatives, and also to learn more about Oxy's summer internships and full-time job opportunities. Dana Fontrop, the Petroleum Curriculum Specialist at WTC, tells me about what her students have been learning so far in the program.
What they're learning in this particular class is just being able to control the pressures inside of a well bore, keeping it from having too much bottom hole pressure that would cause any and all fluids to be pushed out of the well. In that case, it's bad. You don't want that to happen. Learning what limits they need to know about in order to keep that from happening, you know, whether giving it a little bit heavier mud weight is going to help, or if they're able to use a less mud weight, or, you know, not so heavy mud to keep the well under control. Like I said, all that has to do with the heavier the mud, the more expensive it is. So it's just a matter of keeping the company low on cost spending, like I said, so it helps them to better understand pressures that they're going to be dealing with.
She also says this is the first of many demonstrations to come at WTC.
It's something we want to do every year, have them come in, do this, give the class. They've also got a mobile unit that I'm hoping will be in next week, so we can either have them demonstrate, we can get ideas to build our own test site so we can have something here. But yes, it is something that it could be incorporated in probably 3 to 4 of the classes involved in the petroleum technology degree.
Zach Mortensen was one of the students listening in on the demonstration. He tells me about what he has learned so far.
They had a well kill specialist come in and talk to us a little bit about the ways that we can kill a well with a fluid barrier, keep a well from kicking back. So if it does kick, there's a lot of physical damage that can occur to the landowner's land, equipment, and worst case scenario, the loss of human life. It's extremely serious because if there's numerous organizations that in the event of a kick, if somebody's injured, there's substantial fines that will be sent to whatever company was in charge of it and can be upwards of several $1 million depending on what happens.
Tyler Hammond, who is one of the students at WTC, has already worked for Oxy. He has this to say about his experience.
Yeah, I work for Oxy Pipeline as the I&E technician. We did many different things working with panel boxes and the electrical side of pipeline and how it runs and everything. We maintained the pump stations, places where we stored oil, because there'd be plenty of storms, and so something would go down, breakers would come out and stuff, so we'd have to repair that almost daily.
The students then tell me about what type of jobs they hope to get in the future with this degree and their future plans.
My end goal is to become a drilling consultant, and they get paid around $1,500 to $3,500 a day, depending on your reputation and who you're working for, and run and oversee a drilling rig and different operations, drilling an oil well and operating it, but that's going to take around 25 years to get there, but I might as well start here. It's a perfect program for it.
Another student, Kylan Davis, also has something to say about his future plans.
We're starting working out with Chevron in July. I'll be a basic pumper for a while, and once I get my feet wet and realize what's going on, you know, who knows where it could go. It's just a very broad. With this degree, you could go a long ways with them. And so it's a big company with great benefits, and that's how I want to say it.
From the Western Texas College Petroleum Workshop, I'm Regan Stout reporting.
That's it for this edition of Texas Matters. Thanks for listening. I'm David Martin Davies. You can write to us with an email to texasmatters@tpr.org. You can also comment directly on our show page on our website at tpr.org. There are past Texas Matters programs there that you can also listen to. And we are available on iTunes. And tune in again next week for another edition of Texas Matters from Texas Public Radio.